Welcome to the cultural heart of Southwest Virginia, authentic, distinctive, alive. Each week, we share the stories of the artisans of Round the Mountain and Heartwood, the musicians of the Crooked Road, and the business owners of Southwest Virginia that make up the creative economy of the region. Here's your host, Marketing Director of the Southwest Virginia Cultural Heritage Foundation, Karen Doyle.
Welcome back to the cultural heart of Southwest Virginia, authentic, distinctive, alive. The program that features artisans from Round the Mountain and Heartwood, musicians from the Crooked Road, and the entrepreneurs and farmers from throughout the region that make this area special. I'm Karen Doyle, and with me today is Matt Sanders. Matt is the farm manager at Harvest Table Farm in Meadowview. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. I have to say, I am a diehard fan of Harvest Table. It is just such a special resource for our region and kind of a poster child of what we, with the Southwest Virginia Cultural Heritage Foundation, are hoping to inspire in others to have this whole self-sufficient approach, entrepreneurial, what we're calling now, and we're probably borrowing it from you, agripreneurial of all the agricultural activity in the region. But just really interested in how you came into your role at the farm. I think you're coming up on 2 years now, right?
Right. So the end of our second year coming up with the farm. Great. So I got started through Appalachian Harvest. 2009 was my first year. I had just hiked the Appalachian Trail, the economy had just tanked, and I couldn't find a job anywhere. And some friends of mine over in Lee County were telling me about Appalachian Harvest. They had been growing for this organic growers collective that sends produce to regional grocery chains, some of them in the Asheville area, Richmond, D.C., and it's all certified organic. And I figured since I was just taking up space on my mom's couch, I might as well give this thing a try. So I grew some yellow squash and green bell peppers for them that year and just fell in love with it, really. Worked also at the packing house there in Duffield and sort of got to see how it all works, the distribution and just the whole system that they've got going there.
I'm fascinated by that. It is just a real model of an approach that could be on a broad scale basis.
It really is. It's such a unique thing to have that opportunity in our area for growers to be able to grow those quantities and have basically a guaranteed sale through the network.
And that is actually sold through some local grocery stores, but then you also distribute outside of the region within a certain distance?
I've been away from Appalachian Harvest for a couple of years now, so I'm really not sure all the developments that have come along as far as the newer and closer outlets that they have for those sales. But I do believe that they're in some stores closer to home now than when I was there.
Very good. And then, so your work there, is that how you met Stephen Hopp, who is the owner of Harvest Table?
Actually, no, I met Anthony Flaccavento through my work with Appalachian Harvest. I met him at several of the meetings that we had in Duffield and kept in touch with him and was looking to branch out and go on to maybe another area, do some farming in other places. And I asked Anthony if he had any connections or knew of anyone that was hiring, and he said he was. So I hired on with him for my second year over in Abingdon, at Abingdon Organics, with Anthony. I worked with him for a year, and that's how I met Stephen Hopp. That he and Anthony are friends, and I met through Anthony, and Stephen, I think, had been thinking about starting a farm for the Harvest Table restaurant for a while, and decided to kind of throw me the ball and let me run with it for a little while. And it's been a really great experience, and just a lot has come about on this property in 2 years. So we're really happy to have this going for the restaurant.
Well, I was just there, I think it was two or 3 weeks ago, and I was blown away. I had an image of, you know, an understanding of what I thought was happening out there. I mean, it is impressive. So when you came to it, was it just a fertile piece of land waiting to be tilled and planted, or
piece of land waiting to be tilled and planted? The fertile part, we're still working on. It was a lawn and pretty typical Washington County clay soil that needs a lot of work. some portions of our area are higher in fertility than others, but overall we've got, you know, that decades long process of adding organic matter and compost to really get the soil up to a level that we can maximize everything. But it's pretty incredible what we have been able to get out of it just turning the ground over and getting started. Mm-hmm. It has been quite a lot. It always surprises you what you get out of a small piece of ground. And we are pretty small. We only have about 3/4 acre to 1 acre in tilled area that we rely on for our annual vegetable production.
And it's a year-round operation.
Year-round. We've built two what are called high tunnels, steel-framed, unheated greenhouses with just no foundation, so we grow directly in the ground under these structures, and we can grow all year round. They're pretty incredible with clear greenhouse plastic over them. We can grow all the leafy greens, lettuce, spinach, kale, chard, straight through the winter, and the crops perform amazingly well for nights when it's in the single digits and 8 inches of snow. It's pretty remarkable to see them in there in February, just still really lush.
Now, you started this to supply the restaurant, mm-hmm. but you are now also, I know you're at the Abingdon Farmers Market. We were just talking about that before we got on the show, and you said you had a really good turnout yesterday, even despite the weather. So it sounds like the Abingdon Farmers Market has also kind of flourished, and you're closely involved with that.
Yeah, the Abingdon Farmers Market has been such a success story. 3 years ago, when I was at the Tuesday market, it was pretty sparsely attended, and there were a lot of growers who were feeling like maybe this isn't worth coming in on Tuesdays, just stick to Saturdays. And it kind of had a chicken and egg problem of customers not really so enthusiastic about going if there wasn't going to be so much produce, and vendors feeling like they didn't really want to go if they weren't going to be able to make a few bucks on it. And to now, it's what a turnaround. It's Tuesdays have started to look to me the way Saturdays used to look at the Abingdon Market. It's really well attended, and there's new vendors coming in. So I think it's onward and upward for the Abingdon Market.
Very good. And the sense that I know that a lot of restaurants are trying now to evolve into this local foods sourcing. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware, and I'm not that I'm very worldly, but I'm not aware of anyone that actually the farm is attached to the restaurant. Mm-hmm. I know that they would source from farmers. Is this pretty unique, this approach of the farm is actually part of the restaurant?
I think it is fairly unique. I'm not aware either of a lot of other examples. I know that there are some sort of really well-known places. I think Stone Barns up in upstate New York is one of the better known operations of this type. But I do think it's pretty unique, especially in our area.
Now, when I visited the farm, I was surprised too. I mean, it's not just the vegetables and greens. You've got chickens running around. You've got some orchards, it looks like, mm-hmm. starting. Can you talk about, are you involved in all of that? Or are you just really the gardens, or is it all cross-related?
Yeah, it's all rolled into one. I came to the farm and starting this with a background in annual vegetables. And it's really been, you know, Stephen's encouragement and input on getting into the perennial side of things with the blueberries and the orchard fruit and the asparagus patch and all of our other perennial herbs and things like that. So together we've sort of brought, you know, my experience with the mainline crops, and then with Stephen's help getting the other side of the perennial aspects of it set up as well. So it all is sort of folding into one. Mm-hmm. And probably within a couple of years, with the blueberries coming on and some of the orchard fruit starting to get closer to fruit bearing, we're gonna really have our hands full just keeping the perennial side of things picked, in addition to the craziness that can be, you know, all the annual vegetables once it's the main part of the season.
And when I visited, you all were preparing to go to a Tuesday farmers market, and you had, I think I counted, 4 interns that day, which was so impressive. It sounds like you need the help, but it's interesting to me. It seems like you're also, you have this educational approach you've taken with it, which I think enriches it even more. Has that been a part from the beginning, or did you introduce that fairly recently, this bringing in interns?
No, it's been part of our plan from the beginning, is that we would have this be educational and demonstration farm type operation. And we want to continue giving more and more tours, continuing to host interns, and really have it be a community resource in addition to an attraction for the restaurant and a component of it for supply.
Now, what are some of the things you're learning? I know that Stephen was talking about is it a microclimate that the adjacency mm-hmm. to the creek or the mm-hmm. river that's beside it has actually created some growing conditions that you've discovered as part of this. Can you talk about some of the things that you've actually discovered that are new to you at this experience that maybe mm-hmm. you weren't aware of before you started this?
Yeah, we have an atypical farm property. It's not what you would think of when you really think of a farm. It's very sloped. It's significantly shaded over the lower portion of it, and it's a challenge for us to try to just carve out a rectangle and grow row crops. We can't. That's not really what our property is best suited for, and so we're thinking about in that low spot where we have a south facing. A slope right over it that doesn't allow sun onto the lower portion of our field until basically noon, and it's right beside the creek. We decided that we would grow the greens straight through the summer down in that low spot, and we have water, gravity-fed irrigation coming out of that creek that we can flood the beds with if need be. Like when it got really dry there a few weeks ago, we were able to do a lot of flood irrigating. So it's just trying to minimize our costs in equipment and supplies by really thinking about where those crops want to be. If we have little pockets where they're perfect for lettuce and things like that, trying to identify those spaces and really maximize production from them.
Very good. Now, I was surprised to find I am a Florida native where figs are abundant. We had a fig tree in our backyard growing up. I was surprised. I know there were figs and what pomegranates, Stephen was saying, that you all have managed to grow this far. You're on the kind of the border north of the zone.
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
I think that's pomegranates that Stephen is growing. We don't have any on the farm, but we do have the figs.
Okay.
And they... Yeah, they take some coddling. They have to be really well protected in the winter to maintain the growth that they've put on that year so that doesn't die back. You have to wrap them up pretty tight and keep them snug. And a south-facing, very sunny spot is really what they need to do well in our area. But I have had figs from the property. So
now, something else I wasn't familiar with is cardoons. Tell me about cardoons.
The legend of the cardoon. Cardoon is a close cousin of artichoke, and it's pretty difficult to grow artichokes around here because they produce the choke in their second year. So you have to, if you're going to get it to be a true biennial and fruit in the second year, you have to protect, similar to those figs, you've got to protect them really well through the winter. And for most growers, they don't really want to go in for all that extra work just to get some artichokes. But cardoons have an artichoke-like flavor in the stalks. It's kind of a prehistoric-looking plant, some sort of mutated celery that it looks like. The flowers, by the way, are gorgeous. We've just started picking some of those and bringing them to the market. Really beautiful, fragrant, of purplish blue flower. But we take, actually right now, we're starting to cut away some of those stalks, and you've got a bit of work cut out for you to get the finished product. It's a fair amount of processing of stripping down this sheath that's around the stalks and stringing off the ribs, sort of tough ribs on them, and then boiling them in very, very salty water for the better part of an hour. And if all goes well, you get an artichoke flavor from the Cardoon.
Very, very interesting. You're listening to the Cultural Heart of Southwest Virginia, Authentic, Distinctive, Alive. This is the weekly radio program that features your neighbors, the artisans from Round the Mountain and Heartwood, musicians from the Crooked Road, and other entrepreneurs and farmers like my guest today, Harvest Table Farm Manager Matt Sanders. And I'm just fascinated, Matt. One of the first things I did when I moved here 2.5 years ago was to join the With Bland Region Master Gardeners Association so that I could gain a little ground on my husband, who is a farmer, and I felt like I needed to catch up so I could hang out with him in the garden. And I just have so much respect for what it takes. And after I told him after I came from the farm a couple of weeks ago, I said, you got to go up there and see what they're doing. And then I kind of regretted saying that because I thought, oh, he's going to want to try and replicate this and we can't even grow tomatoes. But so it's just so impressive what you've established here. And part of my wanting to do that was this whole return to the land movement that we're seeing. And some parts that's out of necessity. We've got to be more resourceful now. But I think it's also just kind of a return to sanity, and more people are getting involved. You all have the farm tour coming up. Can you tell us about that? It seems like that's a way you're trying to introduce this notion to people and kind of inspire them about what can be done. Can you talk a little bit about the farm tour?
Farm tour is going to be on July 28th. That's the last Saturday of July, from 1 to 3 at the farm. And people can caravan over from the restaurant if they want to have lunch with us there that day. We'll send a caravan over, or can join us at the farm. There's directions on our website. But we are, what we want to do is have a space where people can come and really we can just sort of walk around, look at what we're doing, and talk about how we do it, and to give gardeners ideas, and just for people who really want to get into a little bit more in the gardening with like high tunnels and hoop houses. Some people are thinking about kind of going that extra step to continuing their harvest into later into the fall and earlier in the spring, which is by itself, which is a part of increasing our local produce, just having it more for more of the year.
And that first one you had earlier in the year, it was pretty well attended. You had how many folks showed up?
We're not very good head counters. We think some of us think we had like 60 and some 75. It was a pretty good turnout.
Yeah, really
about 75 folks.
Good crowd. And I can see the appeal and just appreciate you all making that available. And I mean, the work speaks for itself. Again, I'm not a seasoned connoisseur of any means or any sort, but you can taste the difference in the food at the restaurant. Is there a lot of coordination and collaboration? The chef is Philip Newton.
That's right.
And do you work together, or does he basically just, you bring the haul and he figures out what to do with it? Or do you kind of, focus up front on what you want the outcome to be?
Yeah, we're working continuously together to try to really dial in the supply. And it's really tricky to get it just right. And there are times when I'm bringing in things and we're just trying to find a way to use it. But for the most part, we want to have that things planned out enough in advance that we're not kind of scrambling to find uses for things. So that's really Philip and I staying in touch about what amount of business he's planning to get, and from 1 week to the next, and me keeping him informed of what's coming and how things are doing, and with all the setbacks and the surprises that go with that. So we're sort of working with a moving target together.
Wonderful. Well, I have to tell you, and this is no deference to Withville. I live in Withville, but I had some friends traveling from Maine. They had a home they were selling, and they were on their way back to Florida, and they were passing through on 81, and they said, can we meet you for lunch? And I said, yes, I will meet you at Harvest Table in Meadowview. It was just that special. I wanted them to experience that of all the things the region has to offer, but there's so much more and so many good things. But I am a personal fan and appreciate the approach that you all are taken. I think we're going to have you back to talk about the Appalachian Trail. I didn't realize until you mentioned it. You hiked the whole thing.
I did. I hiked it in 2008.
All in 1 year. Wow. 1 year. That is impressive. My husband and I have stepped on the trail 3 times, so we consider ourselves, you know, Appalachian Trail hikers. We said we'll be part of the 2035 class because we're going to do it in bits and pieces. But just touch on that a little bit. I know we don't have much time left, but that's so fascinating that you did that. I can't believe what it takes to accomplish
it. It was a formative experience, for the most formative experience of my adult life, I think. It was about a 5.5 month trip from North Georgia to central Maine, and it was the most physically challenging thing I've ever done. I guess that probably goes without saying, but it kind of came in, I guess the realization of what I was doing came in waves as the path got longer and longer and longer, just realizing that beyond a certain point I had decided that I would finish no matter what. and then you can kind of get yourself into a pickle with getting Lyme disease or getting sick, getting a broken ankle or whatever can befall you to feel like you still have to just keep shoving yourself forward because you're going to finish. And it's not all grueling and grinding. It's a lot of it is just the most amazing scenery you've ever looked at. And you're, by being in the woods that long, I think a part of clean everyday life starts to wash off of you, and you're able to see things that you really would. I don't think most people see just by virtue of the amount of hours you're inside the woods. You see things happen that I had never noticed before.
Now, I know you meet a lot of people on the trail, but did you venture out as a solo hiker, or was this a group effort?
Yeah, I started alone. Hiking northbound on the AT as a thru-hiker, it's harder to hike it alone than to, you know, you're going to be with people no matter what. it's almost like a migration of people going north. So you're with groups for a time, and then you sort of split up, and then you're suddenly back at the same shelter and you see them again. So you always feel like you're part of a group in some way, I think, as a northbound hiker.
And what was your original motivation to do that?
My brother had hiked about a fourth of it in a decade prior to that. He had hiked from the start in Georgia to Damascus and had stopped there. And I guess it just sparked my interest to get out there and see what it was all about.
Now, it sounds like you've been in the... Are you from the area originally?
Mm-hmm. I'm from Jonesville over in Lee County. Mm-hmm. I've been away since college. I've been away for 14 or 15 years before mm-hmm. I came back after hiking the trail and started farming.
Wonderful. Well, it's just inspiring all the way around, your whole approach to life, and the fact that we can actually benefit from that by coming to the Harvest Table restaurant at Meadowview at Exit 24. And I know y'all have done all sorts of things with the restaurant. There's live music. You have Wednesday nights, and you're partnering with Wolf Hills mm-hmm. and pizza and just all kinds of, the pizzas are amazing. This artisan pizzas, y'all have a pizza oven there,
mm-hmm,
right?
We do.
And, what else do we not know that we should know, that we've found out so much that I wasn't aware of before we started talking today? Is there anything else about the farm or just your experiences in Southwest Virginia? And it's just nice that people from the region don't get pulled away, as it might happen so many times mm-hmm. in areas like ours. And it's just encouraging to know that you've made a real livelihood right here in your... Mm-hmm.
I think Southwest Virginia is an interesting place to be in farming right now. I think it's one of those places that's coming around on its own terms to local food mm-hmm. and everything that sort of surrounds that. You can see that in the Abingdon market as it grows. You can see when I drive around on the back roads, I feel like I'm seeing more and more gardens in people's backyards than I ever saw before. And so the people who are sort of getting into it now are coming from all walks of life. It's mm-hmm. not just one demographic at this point, I think. And I think we're in sort of a unique position to, with the land that we have, the resources that we have, to make what we're trying to do available mm-hmm. and involve everyone.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, I think it's catching on beyond the region too, but I think I'm so just amazed. I call it retro progressive, that when I moved to this area that people didn't need to return to the basics, because for the most part it felt like we really never strayed in this region from the basics. And I do see it on a pretty broad scale here. We live in town in Withville, and even in town it seems like there's a vegetable garden on every, you know, parcel of land. And it was almost we felt a little pressure to have ours, because everyone around us did. We were excited. We got a greenhouse for Christmas, and would love to have your thoughts on kind of an approach to that. We got it mainly for seed starting, but you've really extended your season mm-hmm. with your hoop houses mm-hmm. and approach to greenhousing. Advice for beginning greenhousers to consider?
Well, I guess first you decide if you are going to be using it just for starting seeds and starting transplants, or if you want to grow in ground and use it as a high tunnel for year-round production. Mm-hmm. So two fairly different things. And we have both. We have a greenhouse with a foundation and heater and vent that we mm-hmm. is where we do all the seed starting and the raising of transplants, in addition to those two outdoor high tunnels. But I think it's surprisingly simple and easy to get a little hoop house. Mm-hmm. I say hoop house meaning a little bit smaller type structure, things that you can actually build yourself mm-hmm. and don't have to necessarily buy as a kit. And just a sheet of greenhouse plastic and or row cover, what you can do, even if it's just starting seeds in those. You don't have to pour concrete and get a carpenter in to build anything.
Steven showed me the 50-cent louvered doors he said he picked up at garage sales.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant because it's got the drainage built right into the design of mm-hmm. the louvered doors. I was like, we got to go find some of those doors. No, it was just very resourceful and just the whole approach. Now, the fact that you have the chickens and things, do you then use that as part, you mentioned a minute ago, your compost and the organic material, you use the resources from the chickens to fertilize? I mean, it's...
We do. We're collecting all the litter from the coop, goes mm-hmm. to the compost pile, and that's our best tool for heating the piles up. So if we have all of the kitchen scraps from the restaurant are coming out to the farm to be composted, and those are often not very high in nitrogen, the materials in there, and the chicken manure certainly is very high. And so if we need to get a pile really hot to accelerate the composting process, all we have to do is go clean the chicken coop. I think we got it up almost to 180 degrees the other day when we had
wow.
just cleaned the coop out, and that's actually a little too hot for composting, but we overdid it.
Well, anything you've, any experiences that we haven't touched on that, you know, that can be passed along to us who are learning and beginning? Any other words of wisdom that you want to impart to inspire us to fight the good fight against the, what is it, hard pan? And
mm-hmm. There was a French couple who came to stay at the farm last year. They were biking cross country, and they had heard about the restaurant and came and spent two nights with me. And the guy, this was like a 65-year-old couple. They'd been organic farmers in France for 30 years. And the husband at one point said, if you want to know the state of the world, look in your plate. And I felt like that's your start, is really thinking about what you're eating. First of all, what you're putting in your body, and where's it coming from? And you don't have to go too far in that line of questioning to start waking up to, you know, what's available in your backyard and at your farmer's market and right here in our community.
Well, Matt, it's been very enlightening, and looking forward to learning more, and definitely going to grab my husband and join the farm tour, and just appreciate you being here with us today. Harvest Table Farm Manager Matt Sanders will be back next week for the Cultural Heart of Southwest Virginia, Authentic, Distinctive, Alive. We hope you'll join us then.